I can see it all so clear. In my mind's eye, I have the feeling that I've got something to say. The tip of my tongue is burning. I've gotta hold on tight before it slips away. Frustration,
don't get the best of me.
I know that it'll come to me soon. Just gotta keep.
Welcome to episode 1 of Comic Pop Library. I'm Richard Brooklyn with co-hosts Mickey Colwell and Royce Kitts. Today we're talking about ourselves, and we're pretty good at that, I think, don't you guys?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I know there are short bios on our webpage that anybody listening can go and look at, but I thought this would be a way for each of us to go in further detail for the listeners to let you know how we got interested in comics, why we're still into the medium. I will start this mess off. If Mickey's willing to go second, then we'll let Royce... Unless Royce really wants to go second.
I'll jump in right after you, Richard. Go ahead.
Cool. Like I was saying, these are our bios. Here we go. When I was young, this is where it all starts off with, I think, with everybody. Isn't that at the beginning of time? Don't be quiet, guys. You can jump in. Ah, I think the first time...
You're dying fine on your own.
Yes, thank you. The only thing I remember growing up was in the fifth and sixth grade. I hated to read. I was outside playing, did not care for reading, would not go into a library or the school library. I just wanted to be outside. And my mother pulled on my ear and probably touched a few other parts with a yardstick and said, you need to learn to read. And the way she got me to learn to read was with comic books. And the first characters I remember reading were Batman and Aquaman. So for good or bad, my poison of taste is DC Comics. I know others have their specific companies that they like. With this, I'm probably more the exception than the rule. I went on from there, going into the 7th grade, started reading regular books. Started reading, of all things, if you two should know this, maybe our listeners will if they're old enough, the Mac Bolan Executioner by Don Pendleton. These aren't the new ones, these are the old ones. So they were men's adventures, so I got a early education on sex ed before my parents even talked to me about it. So that was kind of fun.
Those are pretty racy books, weren't they?
Well, they're kind of like a romance. At least one, maybe sometimes two scenes where it kind of got frisky.
Yeah, romance with bullets and swearing.
You bet. Makes it fun and interesting. So that kept my interest in reading, of course. And in the 8th grade, I got into an advanced reading class because I was in a big enough school where they did have a regular and advanced. And by the time I finished 8th grade, I had read, the last book I read was K-Mutiny. And so going from reading nothing to reading close to a 1,000-page book, if not a little over 1,000 pages.
Yeah, because it only matters if it's a big book.
That's right. Well, the first one I read was Paradise Lost, so that wasn't too bad. I did not read any. I was into books at that point. And then one of my friends got a hold of me in 10th grade and took me to a comic book store, which I'd never been to before. And the title that jumped out at me, and I don't know how long you guys have been doing this or not, but it was called Vigilante. Do you guys remember that title at all? Or
nope.
Yeah.
Absolutely, I remember it. And I don't remember it because, as you'll find out from my bio, I had to rediscover all this stuff after a big hiatus because I'm a lot older than you guys. But yes. Sure, I remember Vigilante. It was a very popular title for DC, and it spawned a whole lot of spinoffs, as a matter of fact.
And that's what got me back into it. I was in 10th grade. I was kind of the mindset, I need to be dating girls now, not reading comic books. And on the front cover, I think it had the Vigilante kind of in silhouette, dragging a body behind him. And that grabbed my interest. That kind of goes along with the men's adventures theme, I guess. And I picked it up. I think at that time it was a $2.50 book when most comics were still under a dollar, if I remember right. Loved it because it was a mature read. The ending of that series just blew me away because he blew himself away. So that's... just never saw a superhero kill themselves to end the series. So that was very interesting. And it did have nudity in it. Hey, what can go wrong with that?
You know? Nothing.
But then when I got into college, I took another break because of money. I think all of us went through that stage. And I think, like it says on the webpage, Michelle, my future wife, we were in Oklahoma City, went to a store and got back into it, and she said, go for it. I don't know about you guys, but I have this sickness that if I start something, I want to get everything. And at current time, I still love reading individual issues rather than graphic novels. I think that's because that's what I grew up with. My son, on the other hand, he's the opposite. He'd rather read the graphic novels or collected trades rather than issues. Talking about getting older, we've been talking about who gets what when Michelle and I are gone, and he wants the comic books. So we're in the process of inventorying everything. At last count, when my wife and I did it, I had over 10,000 individual issues, and it's growing exponentially by now, and he's wanting to fill in all the gaps on the runs, so we're going to, him and I, start that project. From there, I got into my historical research. They found out I had an interest in comics, and they said, you need to do something on this. The instructor accepted my proposal, and from there he asked me to present it at a historical society meeting, and that's where I started actually doing presentations, and it continued on through my master's degree with Dr. Taylor and Dr. Overmeyer at the University of Oklahoma. They really took me under their wing. They were two very strong popular culturalists, and they got me involved in that and came up here to Western Kansas, little town of Lakin, and the board let me experiment with graphic novels and trades, and after a year and a half, they asked to see statistics, and they were beating out sci-fi, mystery, and westerns combined. So, and then 2 years after that, we actually started getting into the manga and anime, and I was into it in the 80s, but couldn't afford it, and two kids from Deerfield asked me to get involved with it, and I just was, my mouth just fell open because I couldn't believe kids in Western Kansas would be interested in Japanese cartoons or comic books. That just floored me. And from there, I saw other people, namely Mickey and Royce, taking over the graphic novel stuff, so I was like, well, let's have fun with the manga. And I dived in pretty deep with that and been having fun with it for the last, how long has it been since we've been doing this? Presentations, probably 6 years or better.
Yeah, it's been 6 years, Richard.
Because I've been up here for 12 now. I don't know about you guys. Mm-hmm. But, and just been having fun with it. This is why my wife told me to get back into comics, is to have fun and keep my youth. We're still involved with it, having fun. I read everything now. During the day, I read comic books and graphic novels. When I'm going to sleep and getting up in the morning, I'm reading a book. I'm reading everything across the board, and I usually read about 5 books at a time and alternate every evening so I don't get bored. I think I have a little bit of attention deficit disorder, I don't know. But but that's pretty much me in a little bit larger nutshell than what's on the webpage. We can turn it over to Mr. Cowell.
Well, thanks, Richard. I appreciate it. And I also was interested to hear all your story, because I didn't realize that you were as accomplished as you are. There you go. You are quite an accomplished guy, and I appreciate that. I am the old guy of this group, and I might as well just be up front with everybody right now. I started reading comics when they cost 12 cents, and just barely, because in 1962, most comics went up from 10 cents to 12 cents, and so when I started reading comics in about 1964, 65, there were still people complaining about that 2 cent hike in comic book prices, so I've been around a long time. I started reading comics in the 1960s, and I grew up in military bases in Japan, and so a lot of my friends were collectors, because all my friends were kids with time on their hands, and when we weren't out running around causing trouble, we were generally trading comics, reading comics. Back in my day, there were things called paper drives, where you'd go around to each of the houses or the apartments, and you'd collect scrap paper from people, and that scrap paper was comics, magazines. Of course, we were most thrilled when we got the Playboys from the GIs and the other soldiers on base, But among the Playboys, there were...
Do you like the comics? Little Annie Fannies?
Oh, of course. Well, sure. That's what we really read it for, right?
You bet.
But comic books sort of impinged on my consciousness during that time when I was, say, 10 years old, something around that age. And I started reading comics pretty intently during that period. And unlike you, Richard, I was not a reluctant reader. I was kind of a bookworm, an avid reader from a very young age. And comics just seemed one more thing that I could put my eyes on and absorb. And so I began reading all kinds of comics, because in my day, if you went to the barbershop or you went to the PX or BX, comics were everywhere. They were very commonly found. found lying around in giant stacks at your friend's house. They were pretty much the disposable reading medium of my generation. It's changed a lot, of course, with the advent of the web and the internet, but in my day, comics were kind of the disposable medium, not just of boys, I might point out, but there were lots of girls who read comics in my day. My sister read a few comics. I had friends, girls, who actually liked some of the comics that were targeted towards girls during that time, and believe it or not, there were quite a few of them that sold very, very well. But the point is that everybody read comics when I was growing up in the 1960s, and my addiction to comics really came because I needed to have lots of input during that time. I was reading a lot of different things, and comics were kind of new and interesting. The mixture of art and the mixture of prose together telling a different kind of a story really captured my imagination. I also say one more thing that I don't think either of you, Royce or Richard, had to contend with, and that was the extreme prejudice against comic reading during that period. We just came out of the 50s. There was a guy named Dr. Frederick Wortham who had just basically stood the entire industry on its head with a series of congressional hearings about the evils of juvenile delinquency caused by comic book reading. And there was still a widespread fear of comics leading to delinquency. There was still a widespread tarnish to the whole comic book reading thing with children, with young children. And so comics were considered a trash medium, a junk medium, and by some, an evil, a societal evil. And so there was a strong prejudice against reading comics, buying comics, collecting comics, which is what I got into immediately when I figured out that those little numbers on the upper right or upper left-hand side of the books meant that they were part of a series that came out every month. And like you, Richard, I had that completest sense. And so when I saw a comic that said number 16 on it, I immediately wanted to find 1 through 15. And so I spent a lot of my early years trading comics with friends and reading comics back in the heyday of Marvel and DC, the Silver Age, as it's known these days. And so I read a lot of comics during the 60s into the 70s and continued to collect them. And I was fortunate enough that my parents and a lot of my friends, unfortunately, had moms who threw their entire collections in the garbage at some point. I was pretty protective of my comics, and fortunately, my parents respected my love for comics, and we were able to cart them not only around the country, but across the world. And so I still have in my possession at this day, 2011, a lot of the comics that I personally bought off the newsstands in 1966. So it's a nice feeling to have had those comics in my hands and to have had them all these years and all these many miles. So
that's kind of rare in this day and age.
It is. And I have a fairly extensive collection of comics going back to that time. The interesting thing about my reading and about comics in general for me, Richard, was that, you know, in 1981, I gave up on them. I threw them in a box. Fortunately, I took care of them and I put them in their plastic bags and what have you. There were no such thing as backing boards in these days, of course, just plastic bags. Threw them in plastic bags, threw them in a box, left them at my parents' house, and they were stored for 20-some years without being touched. I didn't read a comic from about 1981 to 2000. I wasn't interested in them. I was pursuing other things, as you were, family, schooling, and I wasn't interested in reading comics. But somehow my interest in comics was reawakened, and I took possession of my entire collection again in 2000. In the past 11 years, I've caught up on all the stuff I missed, the crazy collector mania of the 90s, some of the insanity that happened in the comics industry in the 80s, for example, with all the changes that occurred in printing processes. And then I came in right after the terrible bankruptcies and the business failures of the late 1990s, where Marvel, for example, went bankrupt in 1998 and was reorganized. DC went through some serious issues after being acquired by larger companies like Time Warner, that sort of thing. So, you know, it was really an industry in flux when I came into it. The other thing I want to mention is that I've been reading manga since I was raised in and lived in Japan my first 13 years. I was exposed to and been reading manga all my life, but in Japan, manga is a real disposable medium. It's not anything that, it's the storylines. It's almost like a soap opera. Everyone reads manga, and manga are targeted at different audiences. I mean, there are kids' manga, there are girls' manga, there's businessmen's manga. Everybody reads it, and there is no stigma attached to it at all.
And don't you think that is kind of bringing the girls back in now, though?
I hope so.
You mentioned before, like, everybody was reading it.
Yes. Yes, you're absolutely right.
During my school days, you know, it was a stigma to be reading, and girls were nowhere near it. now I'm finding with the manga, I'm getting some girls back in reading the mangas. And they occasionally will dip into the American stuff, but it's primarily the mangas because it's geared for them.
Well, sure. That's exactly the point. It's geared for them. I think American comics have taken a pretty hard left turn towards a very, very small target audience, which is adult males, to be honest. It's not targeted at kids anymore. When I was growing up reading comics, I mean, there were comics for everybody, from Casper the Friendly Ghost to Little Dot, Harvey, and a lot of the publishers, and Archie, who was still around, of course, but that's pretty much the last of the holdouts of the kids' comics publishers. They were targeted and sold millions and millions, and I'm not kidding when I say millions. An average print run in the millions was not at all uncommon in the 1960s. Now you're lucky to have a print run of a couple hundred thousand for a popular book. So to bring us up to the present, when I took repossession of my collection in 2000, I sort of became a comic scholar and dove into a lot of the things that I had neglected as a sort of casual reader or comic fan, and sort of researching the history of comics and connecting with people in the field, because it had suddenly become somewhat respectable to read comics. When I was a kid, as I said, it was frowned upon. It wasn't something that was considered a good or healthy pursuit. And suddenly, when I entered librarianship about that same time, I found that there were a lot of people, a lot of librarians who were interested in building graphic novel and comic book collections and were trying to find a place for comics in their libraries. So I've been talking to library audiences before I even got my library science degree, because I've had a lifelong interest in comics. And I love comics. I love the whole notion of mixing art and storytelling, prose, into a new form of expression. And I'm a real passionate advocate for it. Not as a reluctant reader, as you were, Richard, but as someone who I think... I'm one of those people that has seen that comics appeal to two different kinds of readers. Appeal to reluctant readers. They also appeal to the other end of the spectrum, which is high-end reader, the kid who can't get enough, and the adult who wants to experience a different kind of a reading experience, who wants to go beyond words on a page. And so, you know, I think that comics appeal to everybody, and that's what I am so passionate about, is that here's a real medium that has the potential to run the gamut from our reluctant readers that we face all the time in our libraries to the real high-end folks who may be book clubs that would really value reading, say, a graphic novel by Andy Parks or something, and really getting some adult pleasure out of the reading experience. So that brings me up to the present. I read just about everything these days. I have to be honest and say, and Royce, you can cover my ground in this area, I've pretty much gone away to a large extent from the superhero tights and spandex stuff, because it's too repetitive for me now. I think there's a good place for it, and I certainly don't disparage anyone who reads it, but my interests have certainly shifted towards more indie comics. I read some manga, but I tend to read more of the indie and self-published creator-owned materials in my reading day-to-day, and which is what I'm going to be talking about for our first presentation. I'm done.
I'm still into the superhero stuff, but I still get those areas where, you know, this is not really working. I found myself maturing and kind of straying to the independence more and more myself as well, and I think that's just part of maturing in life. Roy, is you still there?
I am. I think, me real quick.
By your bio, you're almost the exact opposite of us. So
I am, and since we all seem to be taking these trips down memory lane, it kind of renewed some thoughts that I had in my head about, you know, kind of how I've come to view comics over my lifetime. And you know, I grew up in Missouri, and we were a fairly poor family. But one of the things that we had the fortune of doing was living by the railroad tracks. And at the time, the engineers on the railroad tracks would just throw pop bottles out the window when they were done drinking a soda. And one of the things that we were able to do was spend like a Saturday and Sunday going up and down the railroad tracks collecting pop bottles. And you get about 10 cents for each of them. And with the money that you collected, you could buy a lot of candy, a lot of sodas. But we also had money left over, and we were heavy readers of, don't laugh, Richie Rich, Archie, Casper, all those kind of comics. You know, they all kind of blend together in styles and everything. That was something that we were big fans of. And, you know, I come from a really large extended family. I probably have, I'd say, about 60 cousins.
Wow.
When I was growing up, I was probably in contact with about 20 of them. So you have 20 of these people who are collecting comics and sharing them. And they were kind of always around.
Sounds like my wife with hers. They just traded comics, and they didn't care what condition they were in.
Yeah, and you know, they were just always there. You know, when you're going out fishing with my grandpa, there'd be a stack on the floorboard. There was just comics always around, so I never really thought about it and never attached any kind of stigma about it up until about the 80s. You know, as in high school, I think every high school has those guys who were making their own movies and doing all kinds of special effects stuff. And they're kind of a couple of pasty-looking guys. And they were really into Batman, but it was a Batman that I'd never seen before. And it was a very cool-looking Batman. And it was just something I wasn't used to. And I got into reading some Batman. And when I went to college, kind of forgot about, you know, the comics for a little bit. And then there was a comic came out called Sandman. And it was the first time that I had seen grown adults trading comics. And so I was in it with a group of people, and Sandman was our comic, and there was another comic called Shade that we were all really into reading those comics. So, you know, it's for me, it's not ever about, I don't collect comics. I probably have, if you go to my house, I probably have about 30 comics in my house. 28 of those are library books, and I actually have one comic in a sleeve with a backing, and that's an Eric Powell sketchbook that Mickey gave me. That's the only comic I have. I just really enjoy reading them. I love the Capes and Tights stuff, and I agree it's repetitive, but I like that. I guess the only thing that I really dislike about some of the modern superhero comics is I remember when it was just enough to save someone from getting run over by a train or a dam bursting. And now it seems like it's not just the world ending, it's all worlds and all the entire universe is ending all at once. And it gets a little tiring when it's every single series, that's what it's about. I would say, I don't know, I wouldn't call them superheroes, but, you know, two of my favorite characters are definitely Hellboy and the Goon. I don't know if I'd call those superheroes, you know, definitely strong figures. When it comes to other type of stuff, you know, a lot of the mainstream graphic novels that you see out there. As a library director, I have to purchase a lot of it. So in terms of collecting, I don't worry about that. I just try to find out if there's a library that has something I'm willing to read and just read a lot of stuff. I don't read a lot of manga, and I don't know. You know, I've been trying to think for the last couple of weeks, why is it that I don't like it? And I think, as Mickey said, you know, he grew up with it, so he's used to it, you know, and has a real strong love for it. And I think for me, I think it's almost a visual thing. When I got back into comics, I'd say around 2002, 2003, really thick lines, really intense color was kind of all the norm right then. And that's what really drew me into it. So a lot of times when I look at manga, I see really a lot of white space and thin lines. And for me, it's just not as visually appealing as I'm used to. So that's about it for me.
And Mickey, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the main reason that the manga is that style is because they're turning these things out weekly as part of an anthology book, so they don't really have the time to fine-tune the lines and get them into a colorist and inker and everything. That's how I view the mangas. That's how I've always interpreted it. Is that pretty much how you interpret that, Mickey?
Well, about 90% of manga is in black and white, as you know, Richard, originally was, because, as you said, speed is of the essence. You want to get that weekly story out to the kids in installments. And, of course, you know, manga is just another way of you know, getting popular media out to people. And American manga, I think, is kind of interesting because it's a hybrid of not just Japanese styles, but, you know, also American techniques and even some Korean techniques, manhwa, that's really changed the way that we look at characters' faces. And, you know, there's all these kind of interesting, I think, conventions about, you know, how to denote certain kinds of emotions or certain kinds of actions, speed lines, stuff like that. You know, there's a whole language that's grown up around manga in the past 40 years. And I think it's fascinating. And I read manga for pleasure these days as well. But I also recognize that it is changed considerably since the first manga I ever laid eyes on back in the 60s.
I think the main thing you can see that at is the animation styles from back in the early, late 70s to today's animation. You can definitely tell the difference.
Oh, absolutely, especially with all the digital techniques that you use now. You've got so much more richness and complexity.
But I think when you look at the Astro Boy of the 60s, you can definitely see when you hold up a Mickey Mouse character beside it or something, you can definitely see the similarities there. Because you got the bigger eyes, because Mickey and them have the bigger eyes and the hands. It was kind of interesting to do that one time. So if you haven't done that, I'd say try that and see where the similarities are. Because I didn't realize that a lot of the manga was kind of based off Disney to begin with.
Right. When Tezuka created Astro Boy, as they call him in the States, in Japan he's called Tetsuan Atomu. when he was created back in the 60s, he was very much inspired by a lot of the Disney cartoons, and Tezuka gives a lot of homage to Walt Disney and his animators and the movies that influenced him when he created Astro Boy.
Royce, do you think there's more readers coming into the libraries?
Oh yeah, I think a statement that Mickey had made earlier about how American comics are, how can I have a problem with this? They're directly geared at me. How can I not love that? But you know, that is something that I really appreciate about manga, and my personal feelings aside, what it does is it does bring people in. I do like that serialization aspect. Because what it means for me is if I can get someone hooked on Volume 1, they're wanting Volume 2. And, man, if you get them hooked on Naruto, then you're going up to 50, you know. So you really have a chance to really capture them and then get them straightened down on a path of reading. And what I've noticed is it's not that I don't deal with a lot of reluctant readers. What I deal with more commonly is people who don't think that there's material out there for them. And that's the beauty of manga and comics and graphic novels. It just adds a couple of more media types to my arsenal when I'm trying to get someone turned on to reading or into movies or cartoons or anything here at the library. It just helps fill out that basket of good stuff.
So in a sense, we're kind of helping the comic industry by introducing new readers to them, and we don't get them right away. We have to wait for the trade, so if they want it faster, they'll get individual issues.
Yeah, and I've talked to, I'm not a collector, so when I go into comic book shops, I'm not someone who's going to be talking about what do you think of this issue versus 10 years ago. I'm usually just talking about how the things that we can do to help gear people to going to a comic shop. There's a comic shop in Lawrence that actually will give me gift certificates, and I love coming back with a whole bunch of new comics for the kids and then being able to turn one of them onto that gift certificate, because what it means is, you know, they're going to enjoy the materials we have here, but hopefully they'll take that trip down there and check out what they have to offer. It's just another way for these comic shops to advertise. They love it.
I'll have to take some pictures of my office and let you guys see what I draw kids in with. I don't think either one of you have seen my office. You've never been out this way, have you?
Is that a code name for something?
Yes.
For your safe room?
Yes. I have my back cave here. So, and it's almost a cave. I'm in the back of the library in my windowless office. I don't know how your guys is situated, but I used to have windows until the board moved me back to the back.
I was just thinking, I was like, I don't have any comic stuff hanging up around my desk. And then I just realized that I actually have a little postcard from The Blackest Night.
Cool.
And, I can understand where their whole thing with The Blackest Night was to draw people into this big event. But I would say that put a downer on my spirits when it came to comics for a little bit, because all of a sudden I was thinking I had to read all this stuff. And I think that's something we forget about, especially in the library world, is the fact that, they're going to collect these comics sooner or later. So for me, not being a collector, I just try to keep those things on my radar and then wait for the trade paperbacks to come out.
Okay. Well, I think that pretty much does it, unless any of you guys want to question anybody else about anything. One of our compatriots is not here today, Venus Rowland. She's going to be joining us eventually. She's not feeling very well today, so we will touch base with her when she actually can participate and have her give us a bio of herself as well. So that'll be in a future cast. So is there anything else you guys want to discuss, or are we ready to roll this out?
Let's go.
All righty.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Well, for Mickey and Royce, this is Richard saying thank you for listening, and join us again for our next episode.
I can see it all so clear.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use on our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any comic book publisher or distributor and is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official site links of review publishers can be found on our website, www.comicpoplibrary.com. The views and comments of the Comic Pop Library host are not necessarily endorsed by the Finney County Public Library, Kearney County Library, Northeast Kansas Library System, and our Tokonganoxie Public Library.